This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Joy 94.9.
Freshly dug Joycast. Sponsored by MyMac.
The best Apple computer, iPod, and Apple accessory store in Australia.
MyMac.com.au.
Freshly dug until midday on Joy. SMS 0427 Joy 949. Freshly dug on Joy 94.9.
What is about? There's something evolving.
And that was Shirley Bassey and the Propellerheads there, History Repeats. And that was the first choice of my very special guest today, David McCarthy. Hello, Macca.
How are you? And we're not going to do any cheerios. We've banned them. There's no cheerios.
All right. No cheerios today. No cheerios today. Tell me about that song. Why did you pick that one?
Look, I think a couple of reasons. Propellerheads, I think, are fantastic. Shirley Bassey, an icon, albeit perhaps a slightly tarnished one for us. But it was actually played at my 40th birthday, and a very, very good friend of mine, a whole group of them, actually did a drag show, and that was the song. So if you can imagine a very large, white Shirley Bassey falling off the stage as well. But it's if you actually listen to the words, it's history does repeat. My father used to say, the scene doesn't change, only the actors.
Yes. Well, you would know. You've you've been on it for quite a while. But let's sort of go dive back. You mentioned your father there. Now, you were born down in Warragul in Gippsland.
In Warragul, yes. Beautiful West Gippsland, which almost now seems to be joined.
Yeah, I say it's almost suburban.
Almost suburban. I mean, I remember, and that was in the late 50s, so you can all work that out. But I recall that, you know, when we used to drive up to Melbourne, because my father was in business in Warragul and in Melbourne, but you'd drive along the along the highway, and there'd be these huge, just miles and miles and miles of pasture and farms and such things. And of course, there was no speed limit then.
Of course.
But now, like, basically, it's and I was up there recently, and it is almost joined. But yeah, I went to school there, and country certainly changed. And I don't know why. I remember the number of the school, Warragul North Primary, 3695. I don't know why. But how much the country has changed. Things, you know, for example, like chill out, that are now thriving and a huge part of Daylesford. But, you know, some of the gay and lesbian networks in Gippsland, you know, the success they've had.
The string migration that we've just won an award, we heard the other day.
That's how not just Australia has changed, Victoria changed, but how then, which it was the bush, how that's changed.
What was it like growing up and going to school in an area like that in those days? I mean, were you out at school or anything like that?
I came out in 1972. I'm really showing my age now. I was 14, and that was after my first year at boarding school.
Yeah. That'll do it every time.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting, because I'd known quite a bit before that, and, you know, had played around quite a bit. But I remember when I came back from my first year at boarding school, and it was at Christmas dinner that I outed myself.
Mm.
And the whole family, the extended family, there was like about 30.
Mm.
And my father was carving the turkey, and my mother was having a drink of red, as she was a bit prone to do.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, look, I want to say something, and no one was listening. My father sort of did the cling-cling on the glass and said, look, David wants to say something. And he continued carving, and I said, I'm a homosexual. He was carving, the knife sort of slid off the turkey onto the plate, cracked the plate. This is no bull. The turkey slid off the plate, across the table and landed in my aunt's lap. Right. And my mother dropped her glass of wine, and my father went, I won't say the F word on air, but he went, oh, huh? And he said, yes, we knew that. And then said, right, give me back the turkey. I didn't expect that reaction, but certainly growing up in country Victoria, it was very, very different. It was very, very different. If you look at the politicians that were returned from there, it was solid National Party territory. And my father used to say about, well, the country party, you can love the sheep but not the shepherd. And then, of course, later on, people like Susan Davies were returned from that area as an independent. But it was difficult because it was a country town that had industry, part of this decentralisation, which was the fashion then. And I was an altar boy as well.
Oh, well, shake on that. So was I.
Oh, yes, that was very worthwhile.
I was head choir boy for a while, and then I was an altar boy. Yes.
Oh, so head choir boy.
Head choir boy, okay. Yes. I got an extra special medallion to hang around my neck.
I bet you did.
That was about it, you know. Oh, I was terribly innocent then. I didn't.
Oh, I wasn't.
Oh, I was awfully innocent. I didn't come out till much later. You big head start on me.
I think of all those opportunities I could have had to sue the Anglican Church. But, you know, then I went, yeah, from Warrigal North, and that was a real, because there was two state primary schools.
Mm-hmm.
Warrigal North was sort of out of town a little bit, and that was a great school, and I have very, very fond memories of that. Warrigal High School, less fond memories. That was where I did start to, I wouldn't say come out, but certainly assert my personality, and, you know, got quite a bit of flack there. That's where my father taught me to box.
Mm-hmm.
I think they sussed it out quite a few years before that, but it was Trinity, when I went to Trinity as a boarder, that mm-hmm. you know, I thought, and of course I'd heard with enormous anticipation about, you know, that boarding school was a hotbed of homosexuality. Much to my disappointment, that was not the case. I actually had to jump the fence to Xavier to get a bit, so which my father approved of, because he was a Catholic who'd been excommunicated.
Oh, yeah.
Here's a little bit of trivia, because I know you're dying to ask another question. Archbishop Mannix. My father was excommunicated because my mother had been married previously and she was divorced. And as well as that, he'd been an active person in the church and outspoken. And basically, he'd clashed swords with Mannix, and he was also involved in politics, my father. In the Labour Party, but
you haven't fallen far from the tree then.
Not really, but you're going to love this bit, Doug. Archbishop Mannix, when he was laying in state up at St Pat's up here, and I was very young at the time. I remember my father. I remember this, taking me in and holding me up to the open coffin and going, "Look at that, son. That's the face of true evil." That stuck with me. This grizzled, miserable old bastard.
Well, you've had a rather conflicted relationship with the Catholic Church ever since, haven't you?
I have, yes. Cardinal Sinpel and I have...
You had your little run-ins.
Crossed paths on many occasions, some of them less than pleasant, but yeah, he can't help it if he's wrong.
Oh, dear. You're listening to Freshly Dug on Joy 94.9. This hour, I'm digging deeper with David McCarthy. But, of course, we've only just started to scratch the surface. He'll be here with us for the whole hour. But let's have a look at this list of music of yours and see what we can have next. On the Bible by Deuce. What's this all about?
Okay, this comes from in my 30s, I think. And I used to have this little party on a Sunday afternoon before Virgin Mary's opened. We used to call it Mega Trash.
Mm-hmm.
And this was always the opening song. And what reminded me of it was someone actually played it on Joy the other day, and I thought, absolutely, yes, I remember that. It was fantastic. So that it has a lot of memories, but, you know, I suppose as a bit of a handbag number. it's pretty notorious, but the words are good too. The words are good.
Okay, here we go with On the Bible.
Joy 94.9.
Freshly dug Joycast. Sponsored by MyMac.
The best Apple computer, iPod and Apple accessory store in Australia.
MyMac.com.au.
SMS Freshly Dug 0427 Joy 949. Freshly Dug until midday on Joy 94.9.
And that's what you're listening to. My name is Doug Pollard. My special guest this hour is David McCarthy. And that was a very dancey, trippy sort of track we had there, wasn't it?
It was, and I'm sure there's a few people driving in their cars or sitting at their desk doing a little, you know, a little bit of a jigaboo. A little bit of a wrist twirl.
Yeah. Bit of a hand jive at the traffic lights. Mm-hmm. Yes, whatever, whatever. Okay, well, you eventually did get out of Warragul and make your way up to Melbourne. That was when you came to university.
Yeah, boarding school and university. And the great failure of Australian politics, Peter Costello, he was at Monash at the same time I was at uni, and I was involved in student politics, as was he. And
so you picked up your father's politics. You got involved in Labor politics.
I did, but
yeah.
I was quite keen on the Australia Party for a while.
Mm-hmm.
I thought they had something to offer. Of course, they fizzled out like a 2-cent cracker. The Democrats after that, but I did. People often say, "Oh, you know that Macca, he's a Labor hack." I have just as many enemies in the Labor Party as I do in the Liberal Party, but I'd categorise myself as a left of centre, but there's been, for me, the defining issue for me has been gay and lesbian rights. And I think that history needs to be remembered that no other group in our society in all of time has achieved the advances that gays and lesbians have. But we're not quite there yet. And Rob Hulls, who I have enormous respect for, but Rob, I've taken you down from an A+ to an A- on the these latest changes to discrimination, or basically enshrining the right of religious groups to discriminate. Now, for me, that's a retrograde step. I remember when the same-sex laws, the amendments were passed in Victoria, and what a night that was, and what a huge effort it had taken on the part of our community and politicians. And let's not forget that people like Leonie Burke played a huge role in that in terms of keeping the Liberals in line, Susan Davies as well, but that the government did it. But it was 90%. And that last 10%, that elusive last 10%, my wish is that that's eradicated. That's gone before I leave the planet. Well, we've gone back to about 88%, I think, unfortunately.
Yeah, it does seem a retrograde step. I mean, I don't want to get too heavily into politics in this hour, because that's not the point of the hour. I'm more interested in why you became a Labour supporter in the first place and what you did within the Labour Party.
Look, I think 1972, I still have it, and I was looking for it, the little 45 of its time.
Yeah.
What a magnificent campaign that was. My father took me along to one of those notorious Labour Party fundraising barbecues.
Uh-huh.
Yes, where I got a copy of the record. I was given an ALP tie by Gough,
mm-hmm.
which I still treasure. But why
you're a Labour groupie, aren't you?
I'm a tragic. But why did I get involved? It's because, I suppose, my dad was a huge influence. He said anyone that works with their hands for a living must vote Labour, or anyone that works for a living. But it's the social policy and the progressive views that always tilted me towards that side. But having said that, you know, the ALP is a very, very different animal. It's a corporate animal now, and I work in PR, and I look at I actually have to turn off when Kevin Rudd comes on. He gives me the shits. I'm sorry, but like.
And I don't think you're alone in that.
I remember when he was a shadow minister and I was a lobbyist and I met with him a couple of times, and I thought, this guy's going to go somewhere, but my God, he's got an agenda.
Mm.
And he's keeping it, he's keeping it under, and he has transformed the Labor Party. There's the Federal Labor Party from what it was to what it is now, and I don't entirely agree with it.
Well, he's a bit like Tony Blair in England. I mean, Tony Blair took what was basically a moribund Labour Party, yep, still clinging to its old ways of doing things and its old attachment to the trade unions and everything else, and just completely sliced all that away and created, yep, well, what I think of as Tories light.
And
pale pink Tories, you know.
And look, I think, I mean, you know, to you know, I've known quite well four premiers and four prime ministers, and all of them, the only one that I thought really had what it took was Paul Keating. And I look back to when he changed the regulations around gays and lesbians in the Defence Forces, and I remember him saying to me, he goes, well, you know, if they don't like it, they need to understand what executive government's about. And I said, yes. And he says, I'm the Prime Minister. And he said, you know, there has not been an electoral consequence to any government in Australia that has liberalised gay and lesbian rights. And he's quite right. If you look at it, you look at right up till now, there's not been an electoral consequence. You know, the influence of deep conservatives is vastly overrated.
Why do you think that is?
Well, if they're as powerful as they say they are and as they would like us to believe, then why are there so many progressive politicians on all sides that get re-elected despite their campaigns?
It's something I don't understand. One of the reasons that attracted me to Australia in the first place, and I must add this in at this point, was the presence of Paul Keating.
Mm.
Because I thought, yeah, I don't necessarily agree with him, and I thought he could be particularly feral at times.
He
absolutely was, but I admired him. And I thought, if a country can throw up a prime minister like that, that's the sort of place I think I can live in.
He had round objects.
Yes, and also I admire a politician who, well, he's exactly the opposite of Kevin Rudd. I mean, spin wasn't, I think, in the vocabulary for Keating.
No, look,
he was more sort of bull in a china shop head on, wasn't he?
And he, in a lot of ways, I mean, many occasions, and we will move off politics in a minute, I'm sure, because most people will be going, oh, yeah. I was asked on a couple of occasions, once by the Liberal Party and twice by the Labor Party, to stand for pre-selection.
Mm-hmm.
I decided I couldn't do that because there'd be an occasion where I wouldn't agree and I'd have to speak out. But I do admire, having worked with politicians very closely for many years, they have a hard job. And I'll really quickly say the ones that I admire are Dick Wynne, Bronwyn Pike, Tony Lupton, Kirsty Marshall and Maxine Moran, and Rob Holles, because they've done some hard yards for us, not because it's politically necessary, but because it's the right thing to do. And that's what I think, you know, people that work hard in our community, we need to recognise that, not just the politicians, but the other people in our community that work hard for us. They do it because it's the right thing to do.
Right. We've got a message in here. Macca, I beg to differ. As an Aboriginal lesbian, I would suggest that Aboriginal people have had to progress rights from being understood as non-human.
I would agree. I have memories of the referendum to make Aboriginals citizens, and I absolutely agree. And my apologies. I don't mean to say that we've progressed more. I'll change my statement on that and say that Aboriginals have progressed, but I think there's still an enormous way for Australian society, you know, to go in that area, absolutely.
Yeah. Well, as you say, I think we need to get off politics.
Yeah.
It's going to bore everyone rigid.
Oh, absolutely.
If we keep talking about that for a while. Michael has unearthed something he wants to play here, an ALP campaign.
And it is time for freedom, time to move. Remember back, I mean, this was after 20-odd years. You know, Bert Newton, there was a lot of entertainers there. There's Gough with Willy Brandt. But this was at a time, you know, of Billy McMahon, who was notorious for walking down Puckle Street, Mooney Ponds, eating a Chico roll. And I live in that area, and every time I walk down Puckle Street, I think of the Volkswagen with the doors open eating a Chico roll. You know, Billy McMahon was a debacle as a Prime Minister. The Liberals had run out of power. Gough and the Labor Party mounted a campaign, you know, that was extraordinary, probably never been matched. One of the things was, you know, it was about, you know, Diamond Valley and out in that area, bringing sewerage.
Mm.
That sort of thing. But that campaign, fantastic campaign, and that probably was what really got me in. It was very catchy.
We all have a magic moment. We all have a magic moment, I think, where we kind of change tracks. And
something a bit more subtle, this one.
Yes. Now, talking of tracks, what a terrible clumsy segue there. It's time we threw in another piece of music here. You've got Brave by Kate Sobrano. What's the story here?
I just really love the song. It's meant a lot to me for a long time. I've met her a couple of times and, you know, been one of those fawning fans.
You fawn?
Yeah, absolutely. I just think her voice control and everything about this song, I really love. It means a lot to me personally, but we won't talk about that.
All right, this is Brave by Kate Sobrano.
Freshly Dug Joycast, sponsored by MyMac,
the best Apple computer, iPod, and Apple accessory store in Australia.
MyMac.com.au.
SMS Freshly Dug 0427 Joy 949. Freshly Dug until midday on Joy 94.9.
This is Doug Pollard here, digging deeper with David McCarthy, and we've been rabbiting on a bit about politics and about the progress that's been made in this country. David said we'd got maybe about 90% of the way, but with Rob Hull's recent decisions on religious exemptions to the Equal Opportunities Act, we'd probably gone back to about 88%. We've got an SMS here from a young man who disagrees with that. He said, as a young gay man who left country New South Wales and quit my dream uni course because who I am comes first, I'm sorry, but not enough has been done for gay rights and support as far as politics is concerned, especially in rural Australia.
Absolutely. Equal means equal. And I don't give up, and I won't give up till we get to 100%.
So you're going to be voting Green at the next election?
Interesting question. I knew you'd ask me about that. I say, look, let's look at the Greens' track history. Apart from some very, very badly worded draft bills, the Greens have enormous power. The leader of the Greens is a gay man.
Mm-hmm.
Now, let's just say if I was a Green senator, if I was leader of the Greens, what would I do? I'd be saying to the government, no matter who it was, okay, you want these bills passed, okay, here's our gay and lesbian, bisexual, transgender, intersex reform agenda. Unless you pass that, we're not passing your bills. Oh, you want to have a double disillusion? Go ahead.
Mm-hmm.
Let's stand up and be counted, Greens. Talk's cheap. They need to deliver on this one of their central policy planks. And that's why I won't vote for them, because simply they don't have the guts to do it.
You heard it here first, folks. David McCarthy is going to vote Labor again.
No, I didn't say that. No.
You're going to vote Liberal?
I have once.
You have once?
I voted for Senator David Homer.
And why was that?
Because he was a good guy and he'd done a lot for our community.
That sounds like a pretty good reason for me. I mean, that's the kind of judgment I generally tend to make. What is my vote going to do that's going to be best for our community?
And absolutely,
that depends on what constituency.
I love voting. I think it's fantastic. But you know, one area of our community that we don't often acknowledge or talk about much is sponsorship and the role that corporate sponsorship has played. Now, think back many years.
Mm-hmm.
Midsummer, Ford Motor Company in Australia was a sponsor of Midsummer for, I think, 3 or 4 years.
Yes, I remember they had a big stand where you all went and boot scooted.
Yep, I was involved in that, and I was a motoring person at the time.
Your cars are actually a big thing for you.
Passion.
Aren't they?
Politics, cars, Terps and Tucker, equality, and Ford was a Midsummer sponsor, as was Optus before that. When I worked at Optus, we did it, I think, for 7 years.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, God, that cost a lot of money. Ford. And think back, Piss Christ, which was during one Midsummer. Huge controversy.
Now, for those of you who don't remember, this was on a piece of art that was a crucifix suspended in a container of the artist's own urine and hung on a gallery wall.
Yeah. Not my cup of tea or cup of piss, but what the message that it sent, it was about diversity, and as much as, you know, some people didn't like it, well, that's their right. That's democracy. But Ford Motor Company came under enormous pressure from religious groups, from you know, self-appointed, self-perpetuating people. They put pressure on Ford to back out of the Midsummer sponsorship. Now, he's dead now, unfortunately, but Jeff Politis, great man, but very conservative, and he was the president of Ford Australia.
Yeah, I remember.
Now, the Midsummer sponsorship was actually approved. It was approved by Edsel Ford himself.
Yeah.
Right? They were a bit concerned whether or not, you know, how this would fit. Edsel Ford said, Jeff Politis was in favour, and Edsel Ford said, yes. Now, you know, great-grandson of Henry Ford.
Mm-hmm.
Jeff Politis, when all this came up, and he rang me and he goes, Macca, you know, what are we going to do about this? And I said, Jeff, stand your ground. He addressed, it became such a controversy within the company, he addressed the employees out of the Broadmeadows plant and said, some of you don't agree with this. Some of you are uncomfortable with this. I'm a little bit uncomfortable with this. But what you've got to remember is that, you know, we are a company that embraces diversity. Gays and lesbians can be our sons, our daughters, our friends, our workmates. We need to support them and we need to stand firm. Now, that was gutsy.
Yes, indeed.
That was gutsy.
Mm.
And one of the other things that flowed from that is that Ford and Holden and Mitsubishi, not Toyota, in Australia, who manufacture in Australia, as a direct result of pressure that was brought by a whole lot of people, me included, they changed their superannuation deeds years ago to recognise same-sex partners. Now, you know, that's a direct result of their involvement, their sponsorship, their support in our community. Sure, we benefit from it in that they support our events, but, you know, it's easy to say the corporates are only there, you know, to put their brand, and sure, that's part of it. But, you know, making these decisions to support our events is still not easy.
Well, the motor trade is not, well, it's a fairly kind of macho, rather old-fashioned...
Sorry, even...
iron business.
Volvo. Volvo's a big supporter.
Yeah, but, I mean, it's not the most progressive of industries, or hasn't been until recently, in terms of, you know, the culture that's within a lot of these car companies.
Absolutely.
It's quite a macho culture, so it is a major move on their part when they come on board with the gay and lesbian issues. But I remember talking to someone at the Diversity Council, for example, who said that the best outcome they'd had for someone who wanted to transition from male to female had been for someone working at the Ford plant here in Melbourne.
Yep.
And they'd had a very good response from Ford management, and they organised meetings with the woman's co-workers, and it was all managed really well.
I'm familiar with that. I have some knowledge of that, and, you know, this is one of the really important things is that if you can't persuade the people who work with you and spend time with you to accept what you are, then changing society is very, very difficult. And it's, you know, a company like Ford, for example, and, you know, the company I work for, Mercedes-Benz, and also BMW, these companies manufacture in South Africa. Now, for more than 20 years, actually probably 25 years, they've had HIV/AIDS health programs for their employees, in terms of medical support, in terms of pharmacy, you know, in terms of education programs that the government hasn't been able to afford or didn't have the will to do. And that's really, really significant, is that you know, that's something that the company's done, sure. For them, it's about ensuring the health of their employees and still being able to produce cars. But it comes from, you know, it comes from the people and the attitude of those companies. And it is a really important thing that's often forgotten.
You heard it here.
There you go.
We've got to have the corporate sponsors. Okay, we'll talk about cars more generally in a moment, because I'm interested in what it is about cars that moves you and what gives you, and here comes the segue to the next number, Satisfaction by the Rolling Stones. Where'd this come from?
There's nothing like a car that's beautiful to look at, fantastic to drive, responsive, performance. It's as good as sex.
Okay, and that gives you satisfaction.
And more accessible.
Yeah, Satisfaction by the Rolling Stones.
Joy 94.9.
Freshly Dug on Joy 94.9. Joy 94.9.
Freshly Dug Joycast. Sponsored by
MyMac. The best Apple computer, iPod, and Apple accessory store in Australia.
MyMac.com.au.
My name's Doug Pollard. My guest this hour is the man of many parts, David McCarthy. A couple of messages in here. I think, Dave, your fan club is listening here, because we got one here from Tex McKenzie. Interesting chat with Macca. Great to hear more of the great Macca man's story. And also one from Greg Atkins, who's your co-host on Detours, reminding you, you've got to plug the show before we let you go. So we'll do that a bit later on. But it's interesting that Tex messaged in, because he works, of course, for the VAC.
Victorian AIDS Council.
And you have been a director of the VAC, you've been a CEO of PLWHA, you've been a VP of the Orso Foundation, blah, blah, blah. So you've been very involved with HIV.
Yes, and interesting, you know, I want to know what the fascination is with bareback. Bareback, BB, does it stand for blow your brains out? Like, I mean, how stupid are guys? You know, all the people that I know that have HIV and that are living with it day to day, and why people would seriously contemplate barebacking, I really don't understand it. But, you know, if it's not on, it's not in. I don't get it. But what we've seen recently is an uptick in infection rates amongst young guys. This is directly related to, I think, the internet and the accessibility of sex, and the simple fact that the messages, and I don't care who's doing them, whether it's ACOM, whether it's the AIDS Council, you know, the message is not getting through. People don't understand, and it really pisses me off. You know, I remember a discussion with Bronnie Pike when she was health minister, and the AIDS Council was wanting some more money, and, you know, there's always the discussion about whether it was money well spent, and that's a discussion for another day at another time. But, you know, each new HIV infection will cost, in Victoria, the health budget at least $500,000. So it's the same federally and in every state. So if governments don't want to fund worthwhile prevention campaigns that are non-discriminatory, and you're talking only about a few million dollars, then think about what it costs. You know, if financial impacts is what really gets governments going, and usually it is, we'll use that. The personal cost we know is huge. But, you know, HIV has been with us for decades, and people are living with it sometimes better, you know, sometimes worse than in previous years. But, you know, I say to people, you know, for God's sake, don't bareback. Don't be an idiot.
There's something else as well. I mean, obviously, as you say, there's been this rise in HIV stats among younger gay men. So for one reason or another, and I don't know what the reason is, the message hasn't got through to them. Either they've not been targeted correctly, or they're not listening, or we're not designing the campaigns and delivering them in the correct way and all the rest of it. But one thing that strikes me, particularly here in Victoria, is post-exposure prophylaxis.
Yes.
That if you've been exposed to HIV, you can go and get antiretroviral drugs for a month. And if you go within, I think there's a very short time frame after your exposure.
I think it's 24 or 36 hours.
Yeah, but if you go and start this regime within the 24 hours, say, of being exposed to HIV, or you think you may have been exposed to HIV, then, okay, you have an uncomfortable month on the drugs, but you don't get HIV.
Yeah, and it's almost, it's...
But we don't publicise that.
We don't publicise it. I don't know why. Reality is, you know, it's the only thing that is, if you've been in a circumstance where you've been exposed, that is in all likelihood going to protect you. But we don't publicise it. Certainly in other states it has a much higher profile. I don't know.
Much higher take-up rate.
And a much higher take-up rate.
Now, that can't be budgetary because, I mean, the cost of the HIV drugs for 1 month versus the cost of HIV drugs
exactly.
for a lifetime. I mean, you know, bargain.
Yeah. But, you know, the whole thing is...
I mean, is there a moral dimension to this?
Oh, absolutely.
Is somebody sitting back and saying, oh, it would encourage people to be promiscuous, so we can't do it?
Yeah, well, you know, the simple fact is men have dicks and they stick them in other men. That's the reality. And, you know, when they do it in an unsafe way, often the end result, you know, is HIV. So governments need to understand, and, you know, AIDS councils and other organisations need to understand... They've got to take responsibility and get it right, but also, you know, it gets down to the guys that are having, you know, that are having sex. It's their responsibility. This, oh, well, you know, all the discussion about how you discuss it, how you negotiate it. Look, I know that's difficult, but what's to negotiate? Like, if you're positive and you know you're positive and you have unsafe sex, well, you're doing the wrong thing. Now, if you... want to negotiate around that, fine, you can give it all sorts of interesting terms, but, you know, if you went out and did something else to inflict harm on a person, society takes a dim view of that. And as a community, we need to take responsibility for this, absolute take responsibility for it, and we don't.
Do you think that one of the reasons why HIV campaigns have tended to pull their punches has been... And as a former president of PLWHA, I hope you don't mind me asking this particular one, has it not been, to some extent, because there've been people have been afraid of upsetting the sensibilities of people who already have the virus?
Oh, absolutely. Look, you know, it's a very, very delicate road to walk.
Oh, hold on one sec. Just a correction here from Tex. Pep, you have to get within 70... You've got a 72-hour
72
window.
Hours, okay.
Sorry, just wanted to get that
Look,
in.
Look, it's a very delicate road... to walk. You know, people with HIV are marginalised. There's no doubt about that. You know, the health impacts are horrific. You know, the social impacts are horrific. The poverty is horrific. And you don't want to marginalise them more. And the overwhelming majority of HIV positive people, they don't, you know, they don't want to have unsafe sex. Sure, there's a lot of HIV is passed on by people who don't know.
Yeah, but I mean, there's been a fear of stigmatizing
totally.
People who have a HIV, but and nobody wants to stigmatize people with HIV. Let me make that very, very clear.
Absolutely.
But if it comes down to running a campaign that might stigmatize HIV, but will stop some people with HIV, but will stop some other people from getting it, then I think stopping other people from getting it is the priority.
Look, I think you can do very effective campaigns. I don't know exactly what you would do, but there's got to be a way to do effective campaigns that actually address this issue without stigmatizing people with HIV. I mean, it's not rocket science. Like, clearly, though, campaigns haven't been as effective as they should be and as they could be. But at the end of the day, it is about personal responsibility.
Well, Adam Stobbs, another... stalwart of the station here, is called in to say he adores you.
Oh, darling.
And you're one of his personal heroes, but he says the issue of barebacking is a complex set of issues that need to be addressed individually.
Of course, but, you know, like, the internet has given this a huge profile. You know, how many times do you look at a guy's profile, safe sex, oh, you know, sometimes, or it's blank, or needs discussion? What needs to be discussed?
Yeah, you've got to... The underlying message in all the campaigns, and it's something I've been slapped down for saying before, and I think you're saying the same thing, is the underlying message is you've always got to use a condom.
Yeah, and... You
end
know,
of story.
You know,
really.
you wouldn't play Russian roulette. You wouldn't put a gun to your head with three in the chamber and spin it round and pull the trigger. Well, if you do, you're a complete dickhead. So if you bareback, you're a complete dickhead.
So there you are. You have it from the horse's mouth there. Look, I've got a few SMSs in, which I want to get in before we...
I have to leave the station in a disguise. I'll be a...
Susan just rang in to comment on the discussion you were having with the two altar boys. Well, that's you and me. To say it's not all bad news with the Anglican Church.
Oh, no, the priest was fantastic.
On the 9th and 10th of October, the Melbourne Anglican Synod, quote, recalls with pride its pioneering role in 1971.
He's now an archbishop.
For the decriminalisation of homosexual behaviour in this state. Oh, the Anglican Church is the biggest gay club in the country. It's the same as true in the UK. Known that for years. That's why the Americans have got an Anglican gay bishop. Ross Watson, the artist, has messaged in saying, thanks again for another interesting program. I listen to it as I paint. I'm currently painting Matthew Mitchum and Michael Kirby will sit for me in November. I'm passionate about gay rights and I've been letter writing to Rob Hulls and the Premier recently. Thank you for doing that. It's really good that you have written to Rob Hulls to express your annoyance with
and
what he's been doing.
Don't forget, Brumby. John Brumby used to be the auctioneer at the Laird Auction.
Yes, and he adds in another thing. He said, I understand that Qatar and Emirates Airways are owned by their respective governments. Yes. Why are we not hearing more about this within our community, given their appalling human rights record and the fact that they're continuing to hang gay men? My partner and I won't fly with them. I think that's a point that needs bringing up. And here we go again. Another fan of yours here, Jim Culbertson. Hello, Jim. From Chill Out, of course. It's great hearing Macca on Joy this morning. A very real make-it-happen kind of man. From all of us here at Chill Out and the LGB community in country Victoria, we're very grateful to the continuing support from Mercedes-Benz and Macca. And, of course, you've renewed your support for Chill Out this year.
We have. Now, I have to shoot off because I know you've got more people and things to do. The track that...
Yeah, we've got to finish up here, but we must get this one in.
Okay. That we're going to go out with. It's Show Some Emotion from Joan Armour Trading. And listen to the words. Joan Armour Trading, fantastic performer. A little bit of trivia here. I went to an industrial democracy conference in Adelaide when I was a union official, Doug. Don Dunstan was the premier. And at the dinner, I was standing at the urinal next to, oh, God, what was his name? Peter Duncan, who I think was the state attorney general there. And there was a Joan Armour Trading concert on the next night. And I remember having the discussion with him about gay rights, and I think Peter eventually came clean. But this was the start, really, of gay rights getting a foothold in the Australian Labor Party. Okay. And that's why this song's significant.
Okay, just before we go to Joan Armour Trading, you know what you were saying about having to wear a disguise on your way out of here. Sorry, Doug, your guest is not well informed enough to lecture the community on HIV from an HIV-positive Joy member.
Quite possibly, but I've done a lot of years and continue to support PLWHA. My view is not the only one, never said it was. I stand by my statements on barebacking, absolutely. You do it, you're a dickhead.
Right. Well, thank you very much for your time this morning, Macca. Let's get back to flogging cars now.
Yeah. Going for a drive, Dale.
Going for a drive. Yeah, okay. And we'll see you out with Show Some Emotion by Joan Armour Trading.
Show some emotion. Put expression in your eyes.
Freshly dug until midday on Joy. SMS 0427 Joy 949. Freshly dug on Joy 94.9.
Joy 94.9.
Freshly dug Joycast. Sponsored by MyMac.
The best Apple computer, iPod, and Apple accessory store in Australia.
MyMac.com.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast, brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.